It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. What if we could turn our garbage into fuel?
There's not going to be one fuel, one power source that's going to fix the energy issues that we face here. But you might as well be using waste, because that's a definite recyclable commodity. Everybody makes waste.
Coming up, we hear how a new facility in Berkeley County is trying to tackle landfill overflow by taking trash and turning it into a fuel source. This and more coming up on West Virginia Morning. Author John Temple is a professor of journalism at the Reed School of Media at West Virginia University. You may be familiar with his book, American Pain, about the Florida pill mills and their effect on the nation's opioid epidemic. After writing American Pain, Temple turned his attention to the western part of the country. He spent several years reporting on people in the land rights movement and their fight against the Bureau of Land Management, which included two major standoffs against federal agents in 2014 and 2016 in Utah and Oregon, respectively. His reporting on that issue is included in his latest book, Up in Arms, in which he examines the land rights movement through the lens of the Bundy family. News director Jesse Wright spoke to Temple about what got him interested in the Bundys and where he sees their movement going from here.
So, John, thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here. Thanks.
Our audience is probably most familiar with your book, American Pain, about the opioid epidemic, pill mills, and some of the structural issues at the FDA that allowed that epidemic to really take root. Your new book, Up in Arms, is quite a departure from that subject matter. What got you interested in the sort of land rights issues and the Patriot movement?
I was doing some research for a different project that really never went anywhere around militias. And that, you know, of course, led me to the Bundy story, which was sort of hot at the time. You know, some of the events were taking place. So, I just couldn't let it go. And I always have sort of two, maybe three sort of factors that go into my decision making when I'm thinking about undertaking a book, which of course is a years long process. I couldn't find any other books about it. It didn't seem like anyone was writing sort of the full, as much ink as had been spilled on the Bundys. There was no one sort of pulling together the whole story of both the Nevada standoff and the Oregon occupation, which were the two major events. So I wasn't seeing another book on it. It had amazing characters who were incredibly colorful and an exciting story that had a lot of action and you know, intrigue. But it also, it wasn't just that. It shed light, I thought, on a bigger issue. Which was is sort of, you know, has a lot to do with the division in the country today and the urban rural divide and among other things.
Which is, you know, and you referenced this a couple of places, but that connection to the 2016 election and some of the dissatisfaction that really was coming out of some of these issues. Was that a surprise to you how much of an impact that it had on that kind of through line, on that storyline as you started getting really into the subject matter?
I mean, I live in West Virginia. I'm not, you know, and I grew up in, you know, some rural areas as well as some urban areas. So it's not something that maybe surprises me as much as certain people. But the thing about the Bundy situation that I just found fascinating was that I felt like it got such widespread coverage when it happened, because of the sort of shocking nature of there were these photographs coming out of people pointing rifles at federal agents and not getting arrested. It was sort of that combination of things happening that people were like, what is going on here? Why aren't these people getting arrested? And I guess the thing that was surprising to me about it was that people on the coasts were so unaware of that divide. And so I think of the Bundys, you know, the Bundy events, which happened mainly in 2014 and 2016, as being sort of an early harbinger of the shock that they felt when then Donald Trump got elected, you know, in late 2016. You know, the 2014 events were very shocking to people, and it was sort of this early version of that, I think.
So where do you see this issue going forward? I mean, you had a good sort of postscript and closing your book with Ammon Bundy, and that difference between Cliven and Ammon seemed quite stark just in terms of their attitudes towards you as a journalist. But where do you think this issue goes from here?
Yeah, it's going to keep cropping up. You know, I think a lot of Bundy supporters this is not a monolith. This is, you know, a group of people with a diverse set of sort of goals and interests. But generally speaking, I see a lot of sort of pro-Trump, you know, activity among people that I'm interviewing, you know, for this. So they may be somewhat, you know, have less sort of immediate, you know, anger or whatever toward the federal government right now. That's going to change. You know, it'll come roaring back at some point. This issue isn't going anywhere. This has been decades in the making. What role will the Bundys have is a more difficult. I'm certain that this issue is going to crop back up very, very soon. It's in different ways. There will be more events, I think. Will they be around the Bundys? I don't know. The Bundys have been through a lot. They've spent a lot of time in prison. They've had a lot of issues. They are still, in some ways, the leaders of this movement. Which is what they became, you know, after these events. But they've also they I don't know if they have the stomach to just keep doing what they've done. So we'll see.
And then for you personally, I mean, are you working on anything? I know you're the kind of journalist who likes to have a couple irons in the fire, but anything big on the horizon that we should know about or that you're prepared to talk about?
I am working on a couple of things that I'm not, I don't really want to talk about yet probably, but I'm hoping that that there is a movie project potentially in the works with American Pain, and so we've got our fingers crossed for that to move forward, because I think that would be an amazing way to put some of the issues that came up in that book out in front of the public. It would just, the profile would be a lot higher. So that's the thing I'm kind of, hoping for, but I don't have a lot of control over it either, so we'll see.
John Temple, professor of journalism at the Reed College of Media at West Virginia University, author of American Pain and now Up in Arms. Really appreciate you joining us and spending some time with us.
Thanks, Jesse. I was happy to come in.
John Temple's new book, Up in Arms, is available for sale on June 25th. Today, most of our trash ends up in landfills. In the United States, we produce more than 200 million tons of trash every single year. But what if we could turn some of that trash into fuel? As Liz McCormick reports, a large portion of Berkeley, Jefferson, and Morgan County residents, garbage is being turned into fuel as we speak, even if they may not realize it.
This is it. That's what it looks like.
And isn't it safe to touch, too?
Yeah, it's all stabilized.
Confetti or something?
Emily Dyson opens a gallon-sized Ziploc bag full of soft, confetti-like material. It has no smell, and it looks kind of like colorful shredded fabric. This stuff was garbage, and now it's been broken down, cleaned, and can be used as a fuel source. Dyson is a scientist, and she directs the research and operations here at Ensorga, West Virginia, a new waste-to-energy facility located in Martinsburg. There are similar efforts to turn trash into energy elsewhere in the United States, but this one is the first in the country to use a unique technology called Hibiot, or high-efficiency biological treatment. It speeds up the process, turning trash to fuel in less than 3 weeks. Ensorga is based in Italy. Its technology senses and separates garbage to collect biomass, plastics, and other carbon-based materials. Then, through the use of large fans and mulch, yes, mulch, the garbage is cleaned, composted, then separated and shredded, and can then be used as fuel. Dyson says this sort of technology will solve a lot of waste and fuel problems, but is only one piece of the puzzle.
From a waste perspective, there's not going to be one technology that's going to solve the waste problems of the U.S. From a fuel perspective, there's not going to be one fuel, one power source that's going to fix the energy issues that we face here. But you might as well be using waste, because that's a definite recyclable commodity. Everybody makes waste.
Dyson says nearly 80% of garbage that comes to Ensorga will be diverted from a landfill, and at least half of that will be turned into fuel. Fuel that will be used at a local cement factory in Berkeley County. Ensorga's fuel will also replace a portion of coal used there.
It burns cleaner than coal. The cement plant will use up to 30% offset or supplement of their coal.
Ensorga, West Virginia opened its doors this spring, and it's having a considerable effect on lessening the amount of garbage going into a landfill. Clint Hogben, chairman of the Berkeley County Solid Waste Authority, and who invited Ensorga to locate to West Virginia, says in its first full month of operation, the facility saw more than 1,000 tons of waste that either became fuel or was recycled at the Berkeley County Solid Waste Authority.
That's an immediate 10% landfill reduction in their first month for the entire Eastern Panhandle. If you add all the waste stream of the three county Eastern Panhandle, that's in their first month, it's immediate 10% landfill reduction.
But let's back up. How does garbage become the fluffy stuff we saw in that Ziploc bag? Well, here's how it works.
So basically, I'll give you the overview here. Trucks come in, they scale in. Everything about this plant is automated.
Residents in Berkeley, Jefferson, and Morgan counties take their garbage out to the curb once a week, like anywhere else. But only Apple Valley Waste customers see their trash sent to Ensorga. Their trash is picked up and brought to the Berkeley County Solid Waste Authority along Grapevine Road in Martinsburg. The Ensorga facility sits just behind the Solid Waste Authority on 12 acres of land. The garbage trucks are weighed, and then the contents are emptied into the Ensorga building. After the trash is dropped off, Ensorga's Hibiot technology begins its work. There's no human intervention in the Ensorga process, just the employees who operate the machines and watch the monitors.
So this is the control room. Hi, guys. Material is picked up with that big crane right there.
A large screen shows multiple camera views of the machines at work, spinning, cleaning, or shredding the garbage. Dyson says the waste will sit in what's called the biooxidation hall for a couple weeks, while a large fan system sucks and blows air through the ventilation system.
And that is what accelerates that composting, because we're drying that material out fast. What normally takes 3 to 9 months, we're doing in that 10 to 14, 16 days.
Mulch plays a big part of the ventilation process by absorbing and breaking down the garbage smells. It helps to clean and compost the trash that'll eventually become fuel. But getting Ensorga to locate to West Virginia has not been without its struggles. It took 10 years to get all the permits cleared, in part because the facility was a brand new thing for the state, and there was also some pushback from community members.
The first public hearing, there was a lot of people, there was a lot of questions.
She says most of the concerns came from a lack of understanding about how the technology works.
It's hard to wrap your head around that unless you see it.
There was also some opposition by landfill companies. Again, here's Clint Hogben with the Berkeley County Solid Waste Authority.
If you're a landfill, if you're a facility that's going to lose a lot of intake because of this facility, you might be upset and you might get involved and slow it down. So we had some of that.
Hogben says the Eastern Panhandle needed a waste-to-energy facility simply because of the rate at which the area is growing, to find an alternative to landfilling. And he says he hopes Ensorga, West Virginia will be an example for the rest of the country.
I'm hoping those solid waste decision makers will come to Martinsburg, visit the facility, and I'm hoping in that way the ripple effect would be that, that West Virginia changed the direction of management of solid waste. It might be nice to be first at something.
Ensorga, West Virginia's fuel product is being utilized by one local cement plant in Martinsburg. But both Hogben and Dyson say there are other cement companies who may contract with them in the future. And there's the possibility that other companies may have an interest in the product, too. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Liz McCormick in Martinsburg.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Liz McCormick. I'm Teresa Wills.